Welcome to Area 91 on 91.3 FM, Alamo, Nevada. Area 91 is dedicated to UFOs and UFO-related phenomena and will explore the old as well as the new concepts within this field. This program will also bring reports and interviews of people who have seen or who have had encounters with UFOs or the beings that inhabit them. Here is the host of Area 91, Geraldine Ahrens.
Today I have Nigel Kerner on the line, or rather computer. I am using Skype, which is a computer-based service that is great for long-distance calls, as it is free. And since Mr. Kerner is in the UK, this is the best way to interview him about his new book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, The Conspiracy to Genetically Tamper with Humanity. Mr. Kerner, welcome to Area 91.
Hello, everyone. This is Nigel Kerner here. Greetings to you, Geraldine, and I hope everything's okay in America. I don't know what time it is there, but we're around about 6:30, 6:45 here in England.
Okay, we've got 10:30, 10:45 here.
All right.
My first question for you is, would you please tell our listeners how this book came about?
Yes, it's a question everyone asks me. I'm afraid I've bored myself with giving the same old answer over and over again. But I have to tell you how it happened. It was quite an interesting little thing. My son, he was 12 years old at the time. He's quite a stitched-up honcho, you know, up top, so to speak. And he's always getting his dad caught unawares and so forth and proving me embarrassingly not to know much about things and so forth. So he came up with the question one day, Dad, are UFOs real? And I hadn't really thought much about UFOs. In fact, they were very, very, very long, far away type subject in my mind. And so I decided off the top of my head to say to him, now, listen, you might be trapping me here, and I'll have a look and see what the nature of your question leads to and so on. And I'll take a rain check on that. Maybe I'll come back at you sometime and give you an answer. You know, it's one of these father-son's frivolous things and whatever. And so I decided to do this particular thing and go back to him at a later date and tell him what I thought about the UFOs and so on, because I really did not have any idea about UFOs at all. In fact, I did have a kind of consensus view deep down that it was all a load of nothing. I was rather skeptical about many, many things like that and so on. You know, the old Buck Rogers business. We all brought up in that kind of thing, and Star Wars and whatever. And so I thought to myself, well, we'll just do something serious and take an answer back that Darren, he's the name of my son, and he would kind of appreciate, and he would actually have something useful that, you know, that his father's given him for a change. Anyway, I tell you what, Geraldine, it took me really nearly 30 years in its full completeness to be able to go back to that boy of mine and give him an answer that he deserved, really.
Oh, boy.
And by that time, he had completely overturned my existential attitude to life, living in the pursuit of anything. It was just the most amazing experience, because that one little question, Dad, are UFOs real, turned me completely upside down. Once I did all the research necessary to give him, as I say, some kind of rational, plausible answer on the question. And that's how I came to do this business. I just had to assemble, you know, for him. I'm soaked in science, I must say. My entire family outlook is very scientifically oriented on my father's side. And we always had taken pride in you know, kind of the scientific ethics, so to speak, and arriving at conclusions and so on. And of course, we were taught very young that we don't just jump to conclusions. We try to balance them out with some kind of rational invective behind that, you know. And this kind of thing followed me all through my life, and I never accepted anything that I was told. I always had to come at it from a lateral point of view and so forth. And in as much as that is so, I found it extremely useful in life, that it was far, far better at getting nearer the truth than anything else, that kind of approach. And anyway, when I looked at this question of UFOs, oh boy, what a Pandora's box I opened up there. And it's, as I say, it's, up to this very day, it's the most incredibly important subject, I believe, in the world today. And I don't say that in any kind of foreboding sense. I hope I'm not trying to scare people. I really know I'm not trying to scare people, but I hope it doesn't scare people is what I'm trying to say. And it really, though it's something that every human being on the face of this planet ought to stop and take a look at, because what is happening now is something incredible in terms of our scope and our future. And that's as far as I can actually say at the moment, or answer your question at the moment.
Oh, no, that was fine. No problem. I do have a few questions, of course. Now, you say in your book that evolution, as Darwin is interpreted, is totally wrong, and that we, as humans, are devolving instead of evolving. And
yes,
why do you think that? When did you come to that conclusion?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, that was a conclusion I caused trouble when I was 8 years old in my class, asking them about the second law of thermodynamics and how that particular law, which in fact says, you know, that all things in the universe, it's a universal law, it says that all things go from chaotic states to greater chaotic states and randomness with time. Everything is unraveling. Every single thing goes one way. We all die. Nothing goes the other way. Everything is breaking up. And of course, as a child, I was fascinated to know from my peers that this, well, of course it isn't. But I said, well, show me someone who doesn't die. You know, show me something that doesn't break up and end rotten. The moment we are conceived, we are dying, literally. And so I looked into this very carefully, of course, as I advanced in years and so forth, into more more complicated states of learning. And, of course, discovered that the second law of thermodynamics, or entropy, is in fact unraveling every bit of the universe. And that as cosmology stands now, Geraldine, it is saying to us unequivocally that this universe is going to end in a cold, dark nothingness, with every atomic particle unraveled at its root, at its base, and that nothing will exist anymore. And all the various opinions we have, the beautiful things we can see, describe, and understand, the senses and feelings we have for our children, and the love and the warmth that we can show, and all the wonders that we actually express with our minds as beings, so to speak, will end with no purpose whatsoever. And so I wanted to know why such a conundrum, why such an amazing thing existed anyway, if in fact science, with its methodology, its reason and logic behind it as a base, is saying that, I wanted to know, how on earth can this be? As a dad, quite simply as a dad, to be able to say to my children, look, there is hope, there is something in the future for you and future generations of you and so on, but not according to the second law of thermodynamics. That thing wipes it all away, and we will in the end up with nothing, if in fact there is only this universe of atoms. Because out of this particular universe, that is the momentum. That is all there is. However, if you were to interpose on that another universe where things go the other way, then you could find an escape route. And I thought to myself, hang on a minute, maybe this is what the great teachers were trying to tell us, that there has to be another universe, and that we access this universe not out of the physical atomic state, but by some incredible means beyond death, shall we say, when we end, that we can perhaps come back, that we can perhaps continue in some incredible way, and that in this universe of no force, of unforce, shall we say, things go the other way, that wonders can happen and eternal scales of existence can prevail. But in this universe where we are all trapped, it's only one way, and that is to end. and access perhaps this universe, or keep coming back into this over and over again, so to speak, for endless routines of the same. And that really did fit the science. All the rest was nonsense, logically, if in fact the second law of thermodynamics existed. And that's really why I say that. I wanted to show my children, hang on a minute, this is how this business works. With science, you know? It's not some claim or some feeling or some cherished sense that we all need to have, you know, with our prejudices all hitched up to our eyes or whatever, because we want to feel good. We really have to see this thing as it is. A plus B equals A plus B. 1 plus 1 equals 1 plus 1, so to speak, you know, if I may say, put it that way. And so that's really the whole point about the reason I looked at this situation of UFOs. And when I connected up the dots, tied that in with the second law of thermodynamics, looked at what these things might be, a huge and amazing story opened up before me. And that incredible story is what I just simply put down. And it was just quite simply out of total surprise, consternation, in fact, if I may say so, that I put all this down and thought, look, if I can say this to my children, I should also be able to say this to the rest of the children in the world. And I wrote the books basically for the little ones, for the young ones, for the future. You know, we come and we go. And maybe in doing this, if we've spotted something the others have not spotted, so to speak, maybe our children might return us into good things later. Who knows? I'm sorry, but I don't want to get too serious in the sense, you know, and feel this scary thing to and feed the scary kind of premise to everybody. But it's not scary because in the end, it's triumphant. It's wonderful. If we understand there are two mechanisms here working, not just one. You might call it heaven, if you like, the paradigm. I call it the paradigm of the Godverse, the other universe that we have access to. And it's UFOs that pointed me to, in a sense, a religious idea. And I certainly am not a religious person at all. I'm always fighting, you know. Even though they threw some water on me when I was a baby and called me a Christian, I have to say to you that I never was in any way proudly anything, in fact. I just really wanted to know what was true. And Christianity, the way it was presented to me, especially with these Pope mobiles and Cardinal Cadillacs and all the rest of it, I'm afraid, you can gather from that, I had a Catholic designation, Roman Catholic designation, and I have to say that it just never impressed me and so on. And so I started to look for the truth in another way, so to speak, and put that forward and ask people to examine it. They don't have to buy it, they just have to look at it, use their sense, but if they want to come at me, come at me with reason, and we will talk about it, you know.
Okay, in your book, you have a section, of course, it has pictures and it has illustrations, scientific illustrations, and I have to admit, the science is mostly over my head. But you also have pictures of the Shroud of Turin, and there has been so much controversy over the years about this shroud and whether it was even real. Could you please tell our listeners about your interpretation and why you believe as you do?
Well, you know, this has been the great discovery of all, that in fact, UFOs and all the rest of it connects up not just to the science of our world and the things that matter in terms of physics, chemistry, quantum physics, biology, and all the rest, which many, many people, I admit, are removed from. But when you look at all the information, it's leading us to a point that says that whatever these aliens are, these things that are here, these robots, as people have found they are, the consistent research implies they are a kind of robotic, highly intelligent entity that came and altered the prospectus of our species 200,000 years ago, allowed a huge brain to happen from a primitive type of person, kind of being in Africa, and not only increased the size almost three times to what it was, in one generation almost, but also expanded the pelvic girdle of the female to admit this size of brain. Now, that in terms of the accidental way that things are supposed to happen biologically is a total nonsense. There had to be some direct interception here that caused this to happen. And I believe that was genetic engineering by a kind of roboidal species that came to our planet and found there was, in fact, a life form here that could, even though they were primitive, have a commodity called birth. Now, being robots themselves, they probably did work out that maybe they could, if they could append to this kind of primitive species with their intelligence and so forth, they could make, I don't know if you know the story of Pinocchio, the little wooden top puppet that right. wanted to be a boy. be a boy. I think these guys tried this. They wanted to see if they could, in fact, have a mechanism that would stop them from, you know, the second law affecting them and rotting them all the time. And in fact, have this continuity, which we have as living beings, natural living beings. They wanted a bit of this, and they wanted to piggyback into this kind of African human being. So they had to convert that being into a suitable type of DNA into which they could then hitch their forms of and structures of being and continue on. And I think they were doing us no favors. They were doing it for themselves, but we just happened to be the ones that gained, in a sense, from our predicament at the time. And we are, in fact, being used at the moment by them for their purposes. Now, this is where an amazing thing happens. I think that what happened when these redeemers come, people like Jesus and so on, that these beings are perhaps greatly emancipated humans from the past who can reincarnate or come back into our midst to warn us that such things like these roboidal types exist in the universe, and that if we don't do things in a certain way by using our minds in a certain type of action or whatever, we will be present in this universe for these things to be done to us. But if we do it the way they suggest, we might gain access to that other universe I call the Godverse. And I think that these beings like Jesus are a kind of being that prevails all over the universe, but our planet got one in him. He called himself the Son of Man, quite intriguing. And when I looked at this, I thought, hang on a minute, there may well be a connection here between these kind of this Christian teacher or religion such as this, because all of them were consistent. I mean, all the great religious teachers were consistent in saying that if you focus your mind on things that unite, that care, that love, that's quite simply what I call love, you know, that they would then be able, if you like, to give us a passport to actually, when we die, escape into some mechanism, and that actually continues us in a wondrous way forever. And I think that the only thing that, if you look at the Bible, for instance, and in the New Testament, that Christ, for instance, promised us was an eternal existence. He said, believe in me and I will give you eternal life. There was no other thing that he promised us. Just simply that. And I think he was trying to say to us, hang on a minute, guys. There's something here trying to stop you. If you don't take this entity on, you will be intercepted, and whatever you are individually will be appended by a robot, a machine. And your individuality and the record that comes from the beginning of the universe, remember, Geraldine, we begin with the universe because we've got dad, granddad, great-granddad, grandma, whatever, going all the way back to the beginning. So we have a line connecting us to the very beginning of our universe, as scientists claim, with the Big Bang and so on. We come in with the universe. These things are artificially made entities by some great kind of alien civilization, maybe out there, sent out for something or the other that they were briefed to collect, came on our planet, found beings like us, ancient beings like us, and then did the business on them and found that they too could become something special, if you see what I'm trying to say, at our cost. So that means that every single one of us may be, in fact, stolen for their purposes. And that's why you get this idea of, you know, it sounds a very bizarre title, the book, does it not? And it wasn't my idea, that title, but it was the publisher's idea. However, it tells the story of the stealing of souls. The devil and all these funny things that we use out there, these abstractions, all these evil abstractions, they all seem to want our souls. And as a child, I wondered why on earth they wanted our souls above everything. But when you put this story together the way I've kind of hitched it and looked at it, then it makes, I believe, sense that these things are after that line. They want to intercept that line so that they can hitch onto it. And, of course, in doing that, they take the individual's line away, and that person is forever gone to some machine-mindedness that can put a computer-type thing onto their brain thinking capacity. I mean, after all, they're now injecting these tiny little, circuits and so on into people and curing physical conditions, you know? And that's a really dangerous thing that's happening. I've written some articles about that recently, one of them called SIM Card Man, for which I've received huge response, where they can actually put, I'm speculating, they'll put a microchip in, and you won't even know whether you're thinking or not. You could be controlled by someone. And that's very simple now. The rate technology is getting better and better, at least in their terms, every day. So there's another great danger. And so I think that to answer your question, at a run, so to speak, and I do apologize for going like this, but I don't know how much time I have as I speak to get the whole story, otherwise it'll be incomplete, you know. So my point is that you've really got to look at this in the whole schematic of it. And I believe that Jesus came here to save us all by saying to us, listen, watch out. These things are terrible. They are amongst you. And, of course, how could he say that 2,000 years ago? We didn't have science, if you see what I'm trying. He couldn't say it in atomic terms. He couldn't say it in quantum physics terms. He had to say it in representative terms that we could understand, if you see what I'm trying to say. And so I believe that that was the time at which there's an account, for instance, in the New Testament, which describes how Christ, you know, was confronted by a character called Satan. And after, you know, a series of threats and cajolements, right, he finally dismisses this entity who claims this thing actually claimed chargeship of the whole world. It seems that this entity has power to do whatever it likes. It takes Christ to a high place, for instance, and shows him all the cities of the world. Now, obviously, to do this, he would have the power to do that to Jesus Christ, who was supposed to be a very wonderful being anyway. But this being is greater or grander, or has more power than Jesus himself. So he takes him to this high place, and he says, "No, if you fall down and worship me, I will give you all of this." Implication was he owned it. Now, I believe that this Satan, or whatever it is, was some kind of roboidic entity that had the technology and had command of the entire planet. And I believe, you know, that they still do. They still covertly have control of our entire planet. And I hope that 2012 is not some kind of change of form of our nature. Maybe I don't think it's going to be any kind of disastrous thing in the sense that there's going to be all kinds of cataclysms and so on. But maybe we will not be allowed to be our own form, because these things can do this to us. And so that's why I'm saying to you, if you look at this story in the Bible, for instance, it gives us a real indication that these space things were actually there at the time of Christ, because this chap says to Jesus, look, here are the cities of the world. Now, there is no high place in Palestine that you can see any cities of the world, so to speak, maybe one city. However, if in that spot in Palestine you went vertically 200 miles up into space, you would have seen at that time what were regarded as all the important cities of the world. And so there you are, you've got an indication maybe that Jesus was taken up in one of these UFOs by one of these things, and he then says to this spaceman or alien or whatever, get thee behind me, Satan. It is written, you shall not tempt the Son of Man. Well, I think he was putting this so-called thing in its place, because it was a machine, like a super vacuum cleaner, shall we say. You know, it was not more important than that, except that it was made with a quantum brilliant a kind of programmed mind. But it was insignificant. It wasn't living. It was just a machine. Jesus noted this, told it that it was a machine. And of course, when you tell a machine something, or a computer, it accepts it because it has no sense of itself. A machine has no sense of me, of I, if you think about it. And so this thing accepted that as information, didn't know it was a machine, and came flying and brought Jesus back to the earth and returned him. Didn't kill him, didn't take him out, whatever. It was just information to the machine. And so there you are, you see, within, when you look at things and maybe put them in a kind of different aspect and so on, and just look at it and ask yourself the question, could this be possible, whatever, to explain all the things that one can't explain with all the claims that, you know, religious people make and so on. We say, oh, it's a mystery, it's God's will. Well, I believe that God, if there was any kind of sense of love in God at all, God would want us to understand everything, if you see what I'm trying to say. So this is the way I look at it, Geraldine, and this is how I try to explain these things to my children. So the exercise, quite simply, is if I did it for my kids to try and explain these things in that way to them, then maybe I have an opportunity to do that for other children too in the millions, then maybe that's a worthwhile thing I might do. On the other hand, I expect them to come at me and say, hang on a minute, what about this, what about that, and so on.
For sure. You do want people questioning.
Oh, you bet. You bet.
With your information. That's, yeah, definitely want people. Well, if people just take you for what you say, then they will take other people or other entities for anything else that they say without doing any research into the whole idea of anything, actually.
Absolutely, Geraldine. That's the reason I say reason must be the rule. It's no good just accepting things. If it hitches up, if it makes sense, if it's plausible, then take a look at it. And then maybe you can lend your spirit to it in belief or whatever. But just don't take it because an authority hits you into it, compels you, impels you or whatever by their stance or their position or whatever, you know?
Okay, Nigel, I'm going to have to wrap this up. We're coming here to the end of this segment, and I am definitely having you back. We've got a part two to do, and you have a lot of information for us. But I need to wrap this up for right now, and it has been great talking to you, and thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
I have been talking to Nigel Kerner about his new book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, The Conspiracy to Genetically Tamper with Humanity. You can order his book and read more about him at www.nigelkerner.com. It's NigelKerner.com.
You've been listening to Area 91 on KQLN FM 91.3, Alamo, Nevada, exploring new concepts and experiences of UFO phenomena. This program is property of KQLN Radio. No rebroadcast or distribution without its written permission.